Welcome to Red Inca. I'm Jared Kimber.
This episode of Red Inca, we talk about the new fall guy of Indian cricket, KL Rahul. And for that, we get on someone who has written quite a lot about him.
This is Vivek Krishnan. I'm a cricket writer for the Hindustan Times.
We talk about what fans thought he could be, his chat with an IPL owner on the field, how fans see him now, how the Indian side actually use him, and why being an anchor seems to have dated him before his time. All right. What I want you to do is explain to me what happened between KL Rahul and his owner out on the field during the IPL.
I don't think I can say on record the exact details, because I've heard murmurs of what Sanjeev Goenka said to Rahul or what he suspected. But I think let's keep that aside. But obviously, I think Rahul, he had led Lucknow to the playoffs for the last two seasons. And then his form with the bat has always been an issue. And I think things just got to a head with the way things were going for Lucknow this season. On a pitch that was quite... The Lucknow pitch has been difficult for batting. And so, especially in this season's IPL, where teams were scoring 200 plus easily and looking so flamboyant, the owner maybe thought that his team isn't being able to match that and may have had a few issues. But yeah, it's something that Rahul has been grappling with for a few seasons now. If we look at his numbers later, we can, it's pretty evident.
Well, see, I'm going to reframe this slightly. This is kind of what every Indian cricket fan or every Lucknow fan has wanted to do for ages, right? Which is, like, just take KL aside and just be like, what are you doing? So, like, in that innings, I think, didn't he make 29 off 31 or something like that? And then Sunrisers chased him down in about 10 overs. Yeah. And so he is, I'm seen as a KL Rahul defender online, not because I actually defend him, but just because if you actually say, oh, you know, he does this and he does this and he does this, no one wants to hear any of that, right? He is, he's become the Ishant Sharma of the modern generation. And you know, and I suppose you had Ishant Sharma, then you had Ajinkya Rahane, and now you have KL Rahul as the player that Indian fans just absolutely get on all the time.
Yeah, I think most Indian fans think that he's got too long a rope. Pretty much like what happened with Rohit Sharma maybe in an earlier decade, where there's all this talent and he looks so good against both pace and spin. Rahul has got test centuries in England, Australia and South Africa. And so he has all these things, but also like he keeps frustrating often. And I think fans have kind of got fed up. I think most fans are probably against him than for him, because they think that he's not fulfilled his potential. And he's 32. So he's been around for a decade now. He made his debut in Australia in 2014. And the fact that 10 years down the line, we're still speaking of his potential rather than Rahul should have been the, I think, clear successor to maybe Kohli and Rohit. And he should have probably done this maybe 3-4 years back. But he's still someone whose place is iffy in all formats. So I think that's the cause for frustration.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You look at his record and he's a really handy player from an international standpoint. Especially, think about white ball cricket. You can go to a World Cup and have him in the squad, and now he can bat pretty much anywhere from 1 to 6, right? And he can keep. So, you know, he's giving you all these different things. Same in Test cricket. He probably should bat further down the order in Test cricket, but has opened in Test cricket. And that kind of player is, within cricket, very highly regarded, right? Because, you know, most players can play in one position and they're either really good at that or they fail at that wherever. But the problem is that fans don't look at things that way. They look at things of, you know, he's got this mediocre record for someone, as you said, who was going to be the next big star. And so he really struggles there. Let's talk about the IPL. The IPL is really fascinating and because, you know, in previous generations, he would have only been attacked for what happens in India. Whereas actually now it's kind of coming from both sides. You know, in the IPL over the last couple of years, his strike rate's been in the 130s. And this is a guy who could probably strike, well, I think we know he can strike for a season at 150, 155, 160, right? Mm-hmm. He decided to become an anchor after leaving RCB. Some of it has to be that he didn't have very good teams to play in. Some of it has to be, as you say in the piece, that the pitches are not actually as good for batting as anything else. But there's no doubt that he's decided that that is the best role to play, right?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think, as you mentioned, I think the teams he's played for, whether it's Kings XI Punjab or Lucknow Super Giants, they've not been very strong batting units. And so that may be one of the reasons, because I was looking at his numbers and like all across, whether it's for India or in the IPL, his numbers in the power play are quite average. I think he's striking below 130 in the power play in general and against pace as well. But you look at his record for India and his strike rate against spin is 141, whereas in the IPL, it's languishing in the mid-120s. So maybe that acceleration that he maybe feels he has the freedom to do so for India, maybe with Lucknow or Punjab, he's felt the need to bat deeper and he probably doesn't feel that sense of assurance. That, and I think that's probably a factor in his strike rate, which has been the main source of criticism. Runs haven't been an issue. He's been scoring runs, obviously, consistently. As I mentioned in the piece, he's one of just two batters to score over 600 runs four times. So in terms of his output, I don't think that's as much of an issue. But obviously, especially with strike rates becoming even more of a talking point, maybe in the last 2-3 years, I think that's become a pain point with Rahul. Yeah,
it's quite interesting that I'm assuming the other player with more than 600 runs four times is Virat Kohli. Is that right?
Yeah.
So they play together. And when he plays with Kohli, he plays a completely different style. And I don't know if you and I can ever truly understand what happened between at RCB. I was loosely affiliated with RCB at the time. And even I can't tell you exactly what happened for KL Rahul to leave. All I can say is this, that I remember being told in the meeting who they were keeping and who they were getting rid of and just going, so are you guys pranking me? Like, are you serious? Like, how is this happening? But do you think that there's a pressure, and it's probably disappearing now, but do you think there's a pressure in Indian cricket for the top players to score a lot of runs rather than fully express themselves in strike rate? So we know Virat Kohli can score quicker. We know Rohit Sharma can score quicker. We saw Rishabh Pant become a anchor for a couple of years. We've seen Hardik Pandya become an anchor, right? We've seen all these players go back to that. There feels like to me this pressure, whether it's internal or external, I don't know, that these players, to be taken seriously at the top level, have to be the guys who score 600 runs consistently rather than being the guys who go out there and play like Glenn Maxwell.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I definitely think there is a pressure because I think there's a lack of understanding that if a player is playing in a certain way, he's doing it for the team. I think a classic example is Sanju Samson. He's for a number of seasons with Rajasthan Royals. Sanju has been someone who's batted in that attacking manner and not cared so much about accumulating a lot of runs. And I think you could argue he's paid the price in terms of playing for India as much as he should have, because he's not had those big 600 or 700 run seasons. And probably Indian batters do feel the need to also look after their average. I don't think they're doing it selfishly, but I think it's just ingrained in them that they have to score a certain number of runs for them to be in the fray for selection. So they're not doing it consciously maybe or selfishly, but it's just, I think, the way that they play. Yeah.
If you are following my work, we know that you are a true cricket sadist and you need your hit every day. And sometimes, sadly, there is actually no cricket to watch. So how about if someone made a very fun game that you could use for the moments when there is no on-field action? Welcome to Hit Wicket, a strategic game of cricket, which isn't about slamming your finger on the screen very fast. You work out what works best based on how cricket actually works. Dot balls lead to wickets, ones and twos to fours and sixes. So there is no way you can bowl a great Yorker every ball or smash three sixes at the beginning of your innings. This is proper cricket. Yet it still has some gaming powers in there as well. Hit Wicket is about playing, but also building and managing your team. You are the batter, bowler, owner, coach, and captain. It's your dream. No ads, just cricket. So download Hit Wicket today, because this is a cricket game made for you and supported by major cricket nerds. Yeah, I think you're right. I think maybe there's like one or two players who have done it selfishly before, right? Like if you look through the history. But I think if it's that many players doing it, it's not a selfish thing. It's actually what they think they're doing to help the team, right? And you listen to KL Rahul speak, especially when he was, who was he with before Lucknow? Who was that rubbish team? Was it
Punjab?
Punjab, right? So when he was at Punjab, right, he kept talking about the fact, if I don't make runs, no one's going to make runs. Like there's this real mentality of that. But the problem is that, like, in that last 6 years where he has struggled with a lower strike rate, in that period of time, the game has changed, right? And we saw Virat Kohli this year, like, make some kind of laughable comments about, like, you know, the stats guys and the analysts are saying all this sort of stuff, and I'll play this way. And it's like, yeah, but if you're actually now playing the way that the stats guys and the analysts have been asking you to play for the last 6 years. And he finally broke free of that. Rohit Sharma has completely broken free of that for India, not so much for Mumbai, but certainly completely broken free of that for India. But we can see how hard it is for those guys to play that other style because it's so entrenched in the way they're thinking. And Rohit Sharma still has Jasprit Bumrah in his side, right? And Virat Kohli still has Faf du Plessis and Glenn Maxwell and Pattadhara and all these other guys. You know, they've had some good batting talent around him, not to mention the Chris Gayle, AB de Villiers and everything else. You look at KL Rahul and you're like, no wonder he looks at some of these lineups and like, I have to score 700 runs this year.
Yeah, yeah. I think that point is valid, especially for Punjab, Jarrett, because they did have a very fragile middle order. With Lucknow, maybe not so much because they have Nicholas Pooran, they have had Marcus Stoinis, and you could say they've had Deepak Hooda, Krunal Pandya. So there is enough batting depth there, or I think enough batting talent there for Rahul to maybe start taking risks a bit earlier. But
I'm with you, but just like on that, like I just said that Kohli was struggling to take risks with AB de Villiers, Chris Gayle and everyone else. Like, with all due respect to Marcus Stoinis and Deepak Hooda, it's not, do you know what I mean? It's not quite the same, is it? So, and you look at Krunal Pandya in that sign at and in that team at Lucknow, like, he's kind of used as an insurance player. Like, he bats in all these different positions, but we all know he's not really a batter, right? He's like Akshar Patel. He can hold a bat and everything else. So I think you're right. I think there has to be, no one's arguing that he shouldn't have gone quicker. Right? Because like I'm the king of KL Rahul should be scoring quicker. But you do understand when you start to put all these things together where this comes from. The interesting thing about him is I think like for hardcore IPL fans, they'll remember in 2018, he made over 600 runs in 14 matches at a strike rate of 158. That's the reason that a lot of us are like, we know that there is a sixth gear on KL Rahul, right? We know that he is a player. That's I'm not saying he can make 600 runs doing that every year, but that is a transformative season. That's probably one of the best seasons we've ever seen in the IPL.
Yeah, absolutely. And like if you remember Rahul when he started off, whether it's India under-19s or even when he was playing for Karnataka, he was actually someone who was considered to be more in the classical mold. Obviously, I think Rahul Dravid was his idol. And besides the name, there were quite a few comparisons because they come from the same state and stuff. But when he did flick the switch, as it were, yeah, that was surprising at that point. But then, yeah, it told us that there's this ability in him to do that. Even 2016, with you were mentioning about RCB, and Rahul actually in a video interview with Ashwin recently spoke about how 2016 was kind of the turning point for him because it convinced the selectors and convinced people that Rahul could be a white ball player too. Because till then, he was looked at as a test player primarily. So given that he's done all that, which is why the last 4-5 years has been, I think, all the more frustrating because we know that that's there in him. And even more than Virat, he has, I think he's a 360-degree player. He doesn't play the sweeps or lap sweeps as often, but it's something that he can do. And we have seen it from time to time, maybe not as regularly as we would like, but he's someone who can play all around the ground and doesn't have an obvious weakness, I would say. So, which is why it's kind of hard to understand. And it's not just the IPL, right? Even with India, he's had the strike rate issue in T20. So you could talk about the lack of batting depth in Lucknow or Punjab or whatever. But with India too, it's been hard to understand that his strike rate hasn't been that great. And I think it's again because of his scoring rate in the power play, which kind of then carries forward to the middle overs.
Yeah, and it's also worth saying that I think a lot of those guys were convinced of the catch-up innings, right? And that's because that's what they grew up learning. Like this whole generation, you know, Rohit, KL Rahul, and Virat, and there's heaps of others below that. They were all brought up on the idea of you get your eye in, you score your runs, and then you go nuts. And so, you know, Shikhar Dhawan, another perfect example of one of those players, right? And they all did that. And it's like, we now understand that the catch-up innings is fraught with danger when it comes to strike rate and everything else. And so it's not as safe as they originally thought. I just want to talk about some of the other formats. Well, the international side of this. T20 internationals is quite interesting because he averages 38 in T20 internationals at a strike rate of 139. But a lot of his reputation, right, is remembered for the T20 World Cup in Australia where they didn't play very well, when he made runs against bad teams and didn't make runs against good teams. You go through his record and it's like, that doesn't carry at all. But that World Cup really sort of tarnished the reputation of KL Rahul as a T20 international player. But also, he was playing the exact same role as two other guys in the side.
Yeah, because Rohit and Virat back then were also playing a similar role. So, yeah, Surya had to come in, and Surya was obviously one of the standout batters in that. But yeah, like, I think with Rahul in T20s, you don't really remember a standout innings, maybe. A lot of his, I remember even the 2021 T20 World Cup, the one before that in the UAE. And he had a bad start. He was out to, I think he was out in the first over to Shaheen Afridi against Pakistan. And then towards the latter half, where India were already knocked out because they'd lost the first two games. And then against some of the weaker teams, he got half centuries and kind of his numbers looked decent. But against the big teams in that tournament too, he didn't really score. So I think that's been an issue with Rahul, more than his numbers per se in T20 internationals. The fact that you can't really recall too many standout knocks that he's played. And that's been more of an issue with him. Yeah.
I want to talk about ODI cricket because this one I think is fascinating, because if you were to tell an Indian fan that they were going to get 77 games with an average of 49 and a strike rate of 87, like in 2014, everyone would have taken that without any hesitation, right? And generally, up until maybe 4 years ago, a lot of your reputation as an Indian player comes from ODI cricket, right? You know, there's a lot of games, the World Cup is the biggest thing and all these sorts of things. And yet, he doesn't really get the boost that he should. Now, his strike rate is a little bit slow, although it's not that much slower than what Rohit's has been throughout the majority of his career. But those are pretty good numbers. And yet, I don't remember too many people ever telling me that this is a really top-level ODI player.
Yeah, I think that's unfortunate. You speak about his numbers, and actually the real shift, if you look at from the time that he moved down to the middle order and started keeping, his numbers are exceptional in ODIs. They're as good as anybody in the world. So I think he's been... I have no complaints against Rahul in the ODI format. He got a little bit of flack for the innings he played in the final last year against Australia in the ODI World Cup final. But I think they'd lost early wickets, and it was probably a tough pitch, especially batting first. So I would cut him some slack there. But yeah, you look at his numbers, and he's actually managed to keep Rishabh Pant out, even when Rishabh Pant was fit and fine before the accident. He had managed to keep Rishabh Pant out of the team just because of how good he was in the middle order. So, yeah, I think he doesn't get as much credit as he should for the way he's played in ODIs. I think his numbers, since 2020, which is the first time he batted at, I think, number 5, it was against Australia. And from the time he's been keeping, he's been superb. So,
this is brought to you by Cricket 8. They are a new player in the game trying to educate fans on what is really happening in cricket. We have a partnership with them where we host live watch-alongs, do podcasts and write articles. If you want to know what is really happening with our game, visit cricket8.com. Yeah, I think, would you remember, what series was it? Was it 2021 when he played against England? And he just played some really easy innings where he would score so quickly.
Yeah.
And he looked like a completely different player at that point. Yeah, you're right. He averages 55 as keeper with a strike rate of 92. And then at number 5, he's played 30 games and he averages 57 with a strike rate of 95. Like, if the fact he can keep as well, although let's be honest, his keeping is another issue. But this is the other thing with him, is that those numbers look really good. Most people are going to remember the World Cup final, though, aren't they? So again, I think the more you look through his record, the more you find those sorts of things, right? Which is, there's always something to bring him back down to earth. And that's when, let's finish up with his test record. His test record is fascinating. He's now 10 years in. He's played 50 matches and he averages 34, right? And a good chunk of that was played when the conditions were, you know, much better for batting, especially in India. But he has actually played a lot of it in that sort of wobble ball era when no one's making any runs, and in that era when India was just producing absolutely rubbish wickets, right? Like on purpose, like, you know, wickets for bowlers over and over again. And so he kind of clashed in those, and we know that it's hurt Virat's average and it's hurt other, you know, other star players' averages as well. But the problem is that Cal Raul never had that high average to fall down from, and it's very hard to say to an Indian fan, well, you have to understand he averages 34 because of this, 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 and this. Most people are just going to go, well, he averages 34. Why is he still playing?
Yeah. Ultimately, people just look at the numbers, and you could say that it's underwhelming. But yeah, there are a number of factors which have gone into it. Obviously, the pitches at home haven't helped. You look at most of the Indian batters in this era, including Ajinkya Rahane and Pujara, and if they were playing in the 2000s, I think they would be averaging in the mid-50s. I think they played on some poor wickets at home, and when India toured overseas, as you mentioned about the wobble ball and generally the conditions, I think over the past decade have been more difficult for batting. So Rahul has unfortunately never had a consistent run in the team also because of injuries. Whenever he's had a good phase, I remember that 2017 series at home against Australia, where I think he got half centuries in almost every test. And then after that, the series that India won 2-1. And then after that, the IPL came around and he was injured and missed the IPL. And so he's never, I think, managed to get on a run of games where he can feel good about himself and be part of the team for a long time. Even when he's done well, something or the other has happened because of which he's had to go out and then again try to find his way back. So it's been quite a stop-start career because of that too.
Yeah, no, I agree. The last thing I want to talk about is, and you know, we're talking about him being an IPL player, and that's almost separate in some ways. But I do think that, as you said before, he was expected to be a star at a young age. That's not his fault. Do you know what I mean? Like, he didn't say, I'm going to be the next star. And what he's ended up being is a very, very valuable role player, right? You know, as we said at the top, you know, He can do different jobs. He can open. He can bat at number five. He can bat at number six. He can wicket keep. He doesn't have to wicket keep. Do you know what? All these different things right across all three formats, right? He can captain in the IPL. Like, no one's saying he's a brilliant captain, but he can captain. He can be a leader of those sides. I think it's getting harder and harder to be a player in India who doesn't live up to your potential. But more importantly, I think it's very hard to be in India to be that level below the star, right? So there are still some role players, and you know, Shardul was a perfect example of everyone getting really excited about someone like that. But when you're that level above and you're expected to be the star and you end up just being a very valuable contributor across three different formats, that doesn't fit in with the way that current Indian fans follow the side.
Yeah, but Jared, I think the selectors and the team management do recognize Rahul's value, which is why the fans do get irritated. But you look at any squad, even for the T20 World Cup recently, despite the IPL that he had had, and he had not played a T20 international for 2 years, he hadn't played one after the 2022 T20 World Cup, and still, like, he was part of the discussions. And Ajit Agarkar, in fact, in the end said that they wanted someone who's batting in the middle order, and because Rahul was batting at the top, they didn't go for him this time. But I think those around the team do recognize his value because he can do multiple things. And it's always useful to have, right? Especially for a World Cup or where you can only pick 15. Having someone who can do multiple roles, whether it's batting at the top, batting in the middle. So I think, even if the fans, it may be hard because...
But I think that's the disconnect, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The disconnect is that if you're around cricket and you talk to cricketers, you know why KL Rahul is important, right? But if you're a fan and you're expecting him to be the next Rohit Sharma or Virat Kohli, and he averages 34 in Test cricket, and you just played that World Cup knock, and what happened in the last T20 World Cup, and all these IPL innings, there's that break. And that's what I mean. I think it's very hard to be that sort of just level beneath a star player in India compared to, say, other countries. Like, how different is, like, KL Rahul than Aaron Finch? Right? Like, and yet Aaron Finch was seen as a legend in Australia, right? Yeah. Like, everyone was like, oh, good on Finchy. And you look at his record overall, there's some very good parts of his records and there's some very poor parts of his records. Like, he was horrendous when he tried to play first-class cricket and Test cricket and those sorts of things, right? But that didn't affect Aaron Finch's legacy. Whereas I think in India, there is this other thought process out there. And I just think that it's very hard to be a role player in India, especially if you were ever considered to be better than that. And clearly he was, right?
Yeah, I just think that's the nature of cricket fandom in India, that either you're a star or a hero, or, like, yeah, there's utility players or players who can do a role or who can do a job, they're not really in the limelight. And then, yeah, so that's the way it is. And I think that's the way it's always been. But yeah, I think the comparison with Finch is interesting because, yeah, Finch was considered almost almost one of the greats, at least in limited overs cricket, by the time he retired and was captain, of course. Yeah, so, but it's hard, I think, being a role player in India for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because you look at Finch's record and it's, even in limited overs cricket, it's, I know he played a lot more games and played higher up the order and all that sort of stuff, but his actual record is not that different than KL Rahul. And KL Rahul maybe never became the player we wanted to be in test matches. We've talked about the reasons why, which is fine, but Aaron Finch was dreadful when he played test cricket, right? Like, you can't compare the two of them in that. So I just find it really interesting. But that's the world that someone like KL Rahul lives in. And the other side of that is being a role player in Indian cricket still pays really well. So you can't complain all that much from that point of view. I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Jared. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.